All right, good afternoon everyone. We'll make a start slightly after 1 p.m. our due start time. Can I welcome you all to Oamaru, staff and councillors, and members of the public, and declare open this council meeting for the 5th of April. We have apologies from Councillor Neil and Councillor Laws. Someone happy to move, we accept those. Councillor Kempton, second, and Councillor Hope. I'll put it all in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Ian's carried. Thank you. There's no leave of absence. We'll move straight on to confirming the agenda. There are a couple of changes or additions I would like to make with your approval. The first one is I received an email on Monday from the Mayor of Dunedin City with respect to a campaign the city is running around the rebuild of the hospital. And so I'd like to add that into as an extra item on my chair's report or discussion. And then the second recommendation I'd like to make is that we add to the agenda an extra item, item 14. And item 14 will deal with the in-committee minutes of council from the previous council meeting, and the in-committee recommendations from Finance and Corp. So we will need to go into committee for item 14, and I'll be recommending that at that point. Do I need a recommendation to confirm those changes to the agenda, Mr. Donald?
Yes.
All right. I'm prepared to move that we make those additions to the agenda. Second, Councillor Scott. Any discussion? Would appear not. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Hands carried. Thank you. Are there any conflicts of interest the councillors have with today's agenda? It would appear not. All right, we'll move straight on to, we have no public forum minutes of the 22nd of February council meeting. They have been circulated as part of your agenda. Are you comfortable they are a true and accurate record? Yep, somebody prepared to move so. Thank you, Councillor Noon. Seconded, Councillor Hope. No discussion, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye. Against, carried. Thank you. Again, if anybody's missing, just stick up your hand. Staff or councillors around the corner here, and we've got a slightly different format today, but I think it will work well. All right, on to part A of our agenda, item one, chairperson's report. I have given a reasonably full description of our visit to Central Otago and being hosted by Horticulture New Zealand, Summer Fruit New Zealand and Pip Fruit New Zealand. And it was an outstanding couple of days. We learned an awful lot. It was very useful from developing relationships with the industry leaders in those organisations. Gave us a clear understanding of the growth and innovation that's occurring within that industry and the growth that's occurring within horticulture in Otago. And made us very aware of some of the issues faced by horticulturists. Reverse sensitivity, access to land, water, and biosecurity issues, as well as labour, the provision of labour. So in the end of the report, I've summarised some statistics that we picked up during the visit, and it just gives you an idea of the significance of the scale of the industry for Otago's economy, GDP. Other than that, I'll leave my report as circulated. The only other point I want to make is, item 2C. We have written to MP Jackie Dean. We're waiting on a response, and we don't have it today, I'm afraid. But I'd just like to clarify a couple of points there, that ORC is not the lead agency with respect to lag recycle control in Lake Hunter. There is a management plan which was reviewed last year and has been agreed and signed by 9 stakeholders, including the Guardians of Lake Dunstan, I think is their title,
yes.
Mr. McLean. And LINZ, Land Information New Zealand, is the lead agency, and LINZ and Contact Energy provide 100,000 per annum for control of Lake Recife in Lake Dunstan. So we are one of the stakeholders, and I think I need to also talk to the appropriate person in LINZ or work through Mr. McLean and just understand a bit more of the detail of the plan and how it's all working and what was agreed last year before I rush off to Wellington. But I'm not going to apologise, I have nothing further to report from the communication that's occurred thus far at this stage. All right, open my report up for discussion.
Chairman, I want to thank you for your report, particularly for the detail that you've gone into on the Central Otago 2 days. And I agree with what you have just said, that was an outstanding series of visits and information sharing and presentations by those top people in the horticulture area. I think it was an extraordinarily valuable experience. And it left me wondering why it is that a bunch of people from Wellington can come down and tell us about our region, which is basically what happened, and take us to parts of our region that I, for one, was unaware of in detail in terms of land use change, in terms of economic future. I'm not saying this in a critical sense, but I think it should make us all think of it, particularly the city-based councillors. And I, for one, I must admit, find it hard to see west of the Mangatuas. And it's great to be taken into the parts of the region which we usually just motor through on our way to Wanaka or Queenstown or somewhere, and look at the landscapes and think it's all very nice, but without much understanding of what actually is going on, how it's changing, what it may be like in the future. So what I'm saying is basically to our CE and our directors, think about the opportunities to produce a much better informed council in terms of getting out into the region and understanding in the kind of depth we carried here about apple production, cherry production, irrigation, the issues concerned, what it's going to be like in 10 years' time. We shouldn't be dependent on CEs flying down from our capital city to tell us all this stuff. There must be, and there are, local groups who could say, we'll take you and we'll show you what's happening in high country farming, or dryland farming, or energy generation, or agricultural research. I would love to know more about that, because it would make me a better regional councillor. I've had said enough.
Anybody else? Councillor Scott?
Yeah. I want to talk on another issue, on the horticulture, is that right?
Yeah.
Lake Recife, I'm just sitting here pondering, we have a resolution, and I think you, Mr. Chair, rightfully said you want to do your homework. I mean, would it be an appropriate step if, because we've been talking about Lake Recife for a while now, and we're saying that LINZ is the leading agency, to invite LINZ to come to this council to... Hey, maybe do a presentation on their ambitions or their expectations for Lake Recife and Lake Dunstan and so forth. And that whether in a workshop, I'll take that back actually, in an open forum. In effect, it's the council doing its due diligence with you, the chair, and building upon building. Because it seems to me, at a staff level, there's partnerships going on, whereas we're not getting that connection. We've got an expectation. So here's the question. Would it be appropriate to invite a representative from LINZ to come to this council to provide a presentation on the plan and their expectations, maybe their expectations on us. We can debate and think.
I think that would be a good idea. It would add to the report that Mr. McLean had recently updated us on the various plans for lake recycle control around the region, and just help build that knowledge and get a better understanding.
And relationship and everything.
And relationship management, yeah. That is the reason I raised that issue, because when we're not the lead agency to rush off the well, there's a potential to stand on some toes and cause some concern. So I'm just conscious of that and have reread the reports and had a couple of conversations, and resolution stands, that's fine. But we need to look at the whole picture here and understand where responsibility actually lies. We probably should have had that better clarity during that discussion and at the time the resolution was put, but that's fine.
Mr. Chair, I mean, like, I think the debate, I mean, Councillor Laws's motion, and I think he was coming from the perspective of, regardless, you know, who's responsible or whoever thinks the responsibility is, he sort of felt the ORC could play a more leading role, I suspect, for better or for worse. But I think the course of action you suggested makes sense, but an invitation, I raise it as an idea. I think it's a good idea.
Mr. Bailey?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good idea, and the director and I have discussed it. Essentially, it would be a LINS person explaining their role, I would expect, and also to reiterate the plan as it has been agreed to by the various parties. But I think that would be valuable if we've got a senior person, but Mr. McLean has had some conversation.
Yeah, if I may, through the Chair, I was actually speaking to the senior LINS manager responsible for the lake beds this morning.
Yeah.
They are very, very keen to come down.
Oh, great.
At the earliest possible opportunity, so I'll work with the committee secretary and we'll get to facilitate that.
Make sure he or she's got some thick skin.
we'll concentrate on that. That's good. Good idea. And so it's been discussed already. So that's, right. Work in progress. All right. Any other... Councillor Hope.
Through the Chair, I'd just like to endorse what Councillor Baker said. I think we were really quite privileged to have those 2 days, and just the variance of what we saw. What I didn't probably realise until we saw it was new houses, subdivisions versus perhaps, you know, cherries, orchards, why it's so important, as a primary. And that was a big, really didn't hit home to me until you just saw acres and acres and acres. And I thought, wow, you know, we kind of sometimes rush in a wee bit, maybe, with subdivisions, but we must think also of the Agricultural Society. Just on another front, I know this is a little bit left field, but anyone ever gets a chance, and I know we can't always organise tours, but I do endorse again what Councillor Deeker says, anyone also gets a chance to go and do their Target Farm Balance Award, you'd certainly get a great agriculture day, a couple of dairies, a couple of sheep farms. If, you know, we aren't able to organise some low-level Highland tours, that's certainly something also to be used.
Good point. All right, thank you. On to the next item, Chief Executive's report. Mr. Bodig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first part of my report is a summary of a memo that I have already circulated to councillors that talks about the consent part of the bottled water debate. It also talks about what those consents, if they were fully exercised, represent in terms of the total amount of water that is considered to be used in Otago. It talks about water efficiency, and it is for the record, but happy to discuss that if councillors wish to. Second part of my report, item two, is health and safety. We report in detail at the Audit and Risk Committee each time that committee meets. So this is a summary of that report. I'm pleased with not only the approach that the Regional Council staff have towards health and safety, but also the results. And, health and safety has to be right throughout the organisation. And I think we are very fortunate that we've had over the years staff who have taken that very seriously. We have a very effective staff committee, which I sit on ex officio, and that committee considers all sorts of things. It was interesting, there was an article in the newspaper yesterday, I think, on video cameras for enforcement staff. We've had that discussion, and we've made recommendations about whether they would be valuable for us. So we are at that level. We've got staff who are very keen on the technology, and so those sorts of discussions are had. Some cases we move with that technology, some cases we don't, but we certainly have the conversation. So I think we're in good hands. The report shows that we have had a good level of health and safety activity, and one of the questions that have come out of audit and risk and from this council is identifying the five key hazards. That work is well underway, and we will look to report against those five key hazards in the future. So rather than report on direct by directorate, we will report on the five key hazards. Item three, Mr. Chairman, is the Environmental Enhancement Fund. So I'm reporting on the activities since my last report. And you'll note there, reasonably small grants, $3,500 through to $13,000 to, in this case, four groups. The Environmental Enhancement Fund is certainly becoming well known. We don't approve every application. Some of them are just not in keeping with the objectives. But the ones that we do approve have been listed there. And just noting for council that any grant request that we recommend that's greater than $50,000 comes to this council with a recommendation. So as you see, the ones in front of us are ones less than that. I also added the three recent funding grants to the Water Management Reserve, or the Bulk Rural Water Fund. You'll note there that we've got the bottom of those three dot points, Manuhurakea, so that's the ongoing investment we're making with that Manuhurakea Water Strategy Group. It's good that the Strathtyre Irrigation Group are back up and running. They've taken a renewed interest after their consent was unsuccessful a number of years ago, certainly before I started in this role. So they're back in business, and we haven't agreed on the latest amount of funding, but they've got consultants engaged, and they're looking at that same program again to put water in the river at the Scroll Plains, and then bring it right round the Tyree River and take it out in the Strathtyre area. And the final one, which was the first dot point, Chisholm Links Golf Club. This is a really interesting one because it's the golf club looking to put grey water on the golf course. Note that golf course is owned, the land is owned by the DCC, and the golf club leases it from them. But I think this is good from a use of grey water point of view, but I think the key part of it will be how we might, as a community, use grey water in a public facility. Because I would think there's going to be an interesting debate about the use of sewerage water on a public park. And that, to me, is the challenge they've got. I think the mechanics put water on a golf course is very simple. The challenge will be, and I think that's great. I think we need to have, the community needs to have that conversation. So we've asked them to amend their application a little bit to consider that. And then that will be a valuable piece of information that can go out, and certainly as we have our discussion around urban water quality, I think it'll be valuable. Item five, Mr. Chairman, is the tsunami evacuation zone mapping, a piece of work that we're doing based on some of the hazard work we've got, the topography, the LIDAR maps, and also what we know about the behaviour of tsunamis. You'll note in the third paragraph, the key point there is that we're engaging with our territorial authorities along the coast just to make sure, just to truth test what the science and the hazards work will say. And the final point is the proposed head office redevelopment. We will workshop that later on, but I've just noted the resolution that the council made in June. That is what we're working to, and as you see, we'll see this afternoon where we're up to. But I'm very pleased with the progress that we're making, and alongside the potential development for the site is the discussion we're having with the DCC on acquiring the site, and that's progressing well also. Make one comment, if I may, Mr. Chairman, about civil defence and emergency management. This afternoon in Wellington, at 4 o'clock, the Minister for Civil Defence, the Honourable Gerry Brownlee, will be addressing the chairs and key chairs, so that would have been Stephen and myself, if we'd been able to be there, on some thoughts around civil defence. It would be fair to say that the Minister is on record in saying how unhappy he is with civil defence. He's mooting changes. We will listen very carefully to what he is saying. It would be fair to say that I am concerned if we take the local out of civil defence, if it's run more directively from a central government perspective, and preserving the ability of local people to assist and in the initial stages manage a civil defence event, to me is absolutely crucial. It will not work if it's not done locally. It will escalate if it gets big to a regional approach, and then if it's really, really big, it becomes a national thing. But it's got to start locally, I think, and that's the approach that we'll be taking. So if we had been there, that would have been the argument that the Chairman and I would have been using, but we're not able to be there. But I can assure you there are plenty of other people who are arguing that. Councillor Bell, who was with me at the Zone meeting on Friday, certainly we heard that message loud and clear from other members of the Zone 6 and 5.
Questions of the Chief Executive's report. Councillor Scott.
Can I just ask or suggest that we actually do some meaty topics in there one by one? Chair. So, for example, is there any discussion on bottling water?
Oh, right. Well, you're asking the questions. Are you wanting to work through it paragraph by paragraph?
No. All I'm simply saying is, it seems to me often with these reports it's easy, we have a bit of a scattergun sort of debate, whereas if we there's about five topics, and if anybody wants to talk about bottled water, people
are there any questions on once. Consents for bottling water on the Chief Executive's report? Councillor Kempton.
Yes, not a question, but I want to make a point about this that I'm sure other people have got in their minds anyway, is that I read this report and I thought, yeah, that's all really interesting information. But we need to keep in mind where this comes from. I mean, we have stewardship of water through, through a water plant that we're consenting, and it's our job to ensure that no matter what it's used for, that the catchment's looked after. The whole business about bottling water isn't about us at all. It's a nationalistic thing, which of course we know that it'll become an internationalistic thing as time rolls on. People getting our water and not paying for it, that's not our fault. It's a nationalistic issue, and it'll be a national solution, and I'd very much like to see it off the table as fast as we can get it. It's simply not what we're in the business of doing, in my view. The other point I wanted to make, if I can just go to item two, the health and safety, I was offered the opportunity to take a closer look at the work that's going on after after the Water Risk Committee meeting. That the Health and Safety Coordinator is doing around health and safety, and I just want to say that from a governance perspective, I was really impressed with what I saw going on. I think that it certainly is risk management focused. And the other thing that I was pleased about was that there was clear evidence that the risk management approach to health and safety involves as much backfilling around current good practice as it does new practice, and that's a really positive thing. So I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you, and you've certainly had some questions.
Sorry?
You've had some questions at times over
health and safety. Absolutely, I have. And so, in fact, with the introduction of that health and safety coordinator, who's a high level of experience in that area, I think that the if you like, it looks easy. So thank you.
Thank you. No other questions on Auckland water? Yes, Councillor Scott, thank you.
Look, this has had quite a bit of publicity with the bottled water situation, and I'd just like to say that I agree with the tenor of the report, and I think it's one of those issues that you skim across the surface, you think what's going on, but when you dig into it, as the Chief Executive has pointed out, that there's some reasonable processes in place. It was also, I think, in your report too, Mr. Bodicki, you point out that typically the effects are less than minor and no affected parties have been identified. Therefore, on that basis, it's quite simply a non-notified application. And I think people, you know, to us, the reaction, I think, has been that people would throw their arms up. But I think there is a reasonable process there, so thank you for that.
Councillor Deacon, apologies.
No, I want to talk about item three.
Good.
Environmental management.
Right.
And it's really in the form of a question to the Chief Executive through you, Mr. Chairman. I noted with enormous pleasure the success of the Lab in a Box exercise at Wanaka last weekend, where some 450 people went to learn from our exhibits and our experience for them in that Lab in a Box in the weekend, and I thought that was absolutely outstanding. And I congratulate the director and her colleagues for the way in which they organised that and staffed it. I understand they were exhausted at the end of it all, which is understandable. What I'm leading up to, Mr. Chairman, is can we ensure in some way, and it's possibly through the Environmental Enhancement Fund, that we keep that facility, or if that's not possible, we replicate it in our region and possibly as a joint venture with Environment Southland, because I'm sure they could use such a facility as often as we would want to. But the scope for that thing in terms of enhancing environmental knowledge and enhancing the possibility of environmental activism is, we've only just scratched the surface. And we've proved, I think, in Wanaka that it can be done with enormous success. So I'd like the Chief Executive to consider, if he hasn't already, exercising his delegation towards either having that current facility or a replication of it available to us and perhaps a partner regional council.
Thank you, Councillor. I'm going to go to Mrs. Rowe for a start off and then come back to Mr. Sure. Bodicki to answer your questions for some.
So the Lab in the Box is heading up to the North Island for an extended MB-funded engagement up with schools up there. However, we are in discussions with the museum who designed and developed Lab in the Box with the university around something a little bit more mobile than a container ship, because it's quite challenging to get it into some locations, and particularly in the rural locations, which we'd obviously have an interest in trying to get some reach into. So yes, we're in discussions with the museum about potential options. Yes, we had considered inviting Environment Southland to be part of that. We haven't had that discussion with them as yet. As to how council funds that, I guess, is a decision for council to make when I or my successor brings the proposal forward.
Thank you. Mr.
Bodicki, just to add, I mean, I'm sure Councillor Deacon, you'd be familiar with your background, the Life Education Trust, the way that they have been very mobile in their extremely good work, and that was the vision when Mrs. Rowe and I talked about it on Monday. Something a bit more mobile could be something just as simple as that, because we could certainly move it around if we could. We'll certainly commit to have a look at what that might, what the resourcing might be required in terms of funding and also in how we might staff it. We have a meeting, the Chairman and I have a meeting with ECAN very soon. We'll add it to our list, and I have a meeting with the Chief Executive of Environment Southland, and we'll put that on the list because I think it's been.
Thank you. All right. So Environmental Enhancement Fund.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any questions there? Councillor Scott?
Yeah, thank you for work that you're doing in the Environmental Enhancement Funds. And when I looked at these, I think these four grants, I actually thought all of them were good, so thank you, you know, well done. Are we not getting grants, Mr. Bodecker, at a larger grants? In fact, one of the criteria was preferences for a few larger rather than smaller allocations. I know I flicked on one of the DCC councillors was promoting, I think, access way purchase of some land for a cycleway through one of the tunnels or whatever. Did that miss out on the criteria? And I'm not suggesting for a moment that it was appropriate, but I passed it on. It would be interesting, just a little bit of feedback, just where it didn't miss.
Yes, we did not recommend that we bought, because that was $200,000 they were looking for to buy a block of land so they could put their cycleway through the tunnel. We did not recommend it from an Environmental Enhancement Fund, but we recommended to that group that they come through the annual plan process. So so I'm sure you will, if they want to, that you'll get to see it. In terms of size, remember the HALO project was a very big one, and it came through this council. I'm excited when I get applications for $5,000 to $3,000 because they tend to be groups of local people who are looking for a little bit of equipment, and often it's hand tools. You know, they're looking for some loppers and you know, small chainsaw and all of that good stuff, so they can go and do their voluntary work. And the feedback that we get when they are successful is tremendous. And I mean, a little bit of feedback that I've had as a result of what they've done, and they'll report after 12 months, these smaller ones, is really good. So one of the things, and we talked about engaging with our community outside of our chamber, one of the things that as we have a few more of these, you know, going through a 12-month process, is I'd like to think that we would visit some of them as a council, because that's what I'm trying to do. Occasionally I'll pop in to see one or two of these people, and normally just sit and have a cup of tea. So I think the kudos that the council is getting right across the governance and management is good for this. But we do consider the big ones, but to date they've been this size.
How are we tracking? Like, if we, I mean, there's $500,000, I think, at the start.
We put $250,000 in for 2 years, so we're into year two, and
It was half a million at the start, wasn't it? About, it was $250,000 times two, I think, at one point.
Yeah, no, it was $250,000 a year, and we're in our second year of it, and we've got $300,000 remaining. So for a scheme that we deliberately didn't go out and yell it from every rooftop, we've certainly, and we are getting more and more. There were two more that we considered at our executive meeting yesterday, and so they're coming in virtually weekly. It's very, very good.
Really good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hogan?
Just two questions. First of all, I thought it was very good the other day at the Dean Ward permit. You had obviously quite a pesky Member of Parliament that kept asking questions, and I thought you had a great answer there about the bowling water. Well done, thank you. Because there was certainly a lot of murmurs from where we were sitting. It was really great. Second question is, I just wanted to know this. If we were in the council chamber to do with health and safety, and something happened to one of us, that would be added to your report? How does that work?
Yes, well, through you, Mr. Chairman, councillors are independent contractors, so my responsibility as chief executive, I have a responsibility to staff. I have a duty of care to councillors, but not a responsibility for your health and safety. Now, that doesn't mean to say I play fast and loose with your health and safety, councillor. Far be it. But you know. So for example, I have not only responsibility, but I have authorisation over staff. So, for example, I can authorise if the hours of work where I cannot do that under law for councillors. The duty of care that we exercise as a council for councillors extend to meeting time starts. They differ in the winter. We you know, where possible, avoid travel at certain times, especially through central. So that's the duty of care.
And then on the wall, it has two or three people that you would bring for first aid.
Correct.
Now, here's just a scenario I was thinking about. This is, I read your report, and
yes.
I really like it, thank you.
Yes.
Silly question, but I'll ask it.
No.
What if one of us, something happens, and now you know how it goes in panic, you might forget to ring, you might go over to that council chamber, and that could be different, 3 to 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Is there any one of us here that's competent enough, or do we have to rely on those three people that you have got?
Yep. Through the chairman, the committee secretary is trained. She's a trained first aider. So that's. But if a councillor wished to be trained, I would certainly not hesitate to fund that training so that we could have a councillor as well. But we've got Lauren who is trained.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Item 5. Tsunami evacuation zone mapping.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the third paragraph, it talks about follow-up meetings with the coastal communities that potentially we end up in these zoned areas. And I just wondered whether additionally we were able to connect with the individual households by way of a flyer or something once these maps were confirmed. It's just that not everyone can make a public meeting, and you know, that's fine and dandy for the ones that can make it. But this is pretty important information, very important information, and we have an obligation to, once it's collated, to share it. And you know, I just wondered maybe an additional approach that would help to connect with far greater numbers in the community.
So through you, Mr. Chairman, right now we're looking at signage. And it may be, if we use signage, we're looking at sirens, but we've probably ruled those out because they take an awful lot of maintenance and they can be confusing, especially if they haven't gone off for some reason. But certainly how we communicate directly with individuals will be something that we are looking at. So I'll take your point. We're hoping that if we get enough of the community to form a community group, they will inform their neighbours. But again, a lot of communities these days have to give permission to bang on the neighbour's door because we don't do that as much as we used to. It's interesting, when the last evacuation occurred, we had one of our staff members who came to me and said she couldn't understand why all these people at 8 o'clock in the morning were heading back into their houses. And they were all her neighbours that had got off and evacuated, and no one had banged on her door, so she was a bit upset, and she wondered what she'd done. But so I think we've got to have those discussions with some of our communities that, you know, in these sorts of situations, you do have permission to bang on the door. But certainly take your point on how we engage.
Through the chair, my point was more around sharing information about the maps rather than an incident, because, you know, if you're within the space or within the zoned area, it's really good to know.
Yes.
But equally, for people just outside, it's pretty good for them to know as well. So that was really making sure that information goes out.
Certainly do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
If I may, through you, Mr. Chairman, we're being mindful that we don't want... We're talking about a zone where you perhaps need to evacuate from, rather than it being classed as an inundation zone. Because an inundation zone tends to end up on your limb. So we're not saying that. We're saying these are zones from which it might be best if you evacuated in an event. Mm-hmm. So we're being very careful with our language.
Thank you.
Councillor Brown. I just wonder, with regard to that, this applies to coastal areas. Are we going to do the same work, or has it already been done for our lakes areas in terms of tsunami risk?
That's the next part of yep. Yep. Yep.
Councillor Scott.
You didn't refer to the Water Management Reserve Bulk Rural Water Fund. Can we refer to that? Only if you're finished with discussing the tsunami yet.
Apologies. Oh, we're straight from Environmental Enhancement Fund. So you're correct.
Is there anybody?
I'm the chairman.
No.
We'll go back to item 4 as your question, Councillor.
Yeah, thank you. I apologise, sir.
Yes, questions on item 4, Water Management Reserve, Hot Water Fund.
Yeah, my question was, the Manuhira Care. Look, if
just to fill in a little bit more background, because what we've spent as a council, we've spent quite a bit of money on that. My understanding, it's heading towards $500,000 a year. I remember being part of a debate this time last year where I was put in my place regarding the Manuhea care and what was open debate and what wasn't. So what was this 49 for? And when was it basically, it was paid on the 20th of March, but when were the wheels put in motion for it to be agreed? Maybe just a bit of background, I would appreciate, without stirring the pot too much.
No, it's a good question, and so obviously there's some more ongoing work that the strategy group is working on as part of its proposal. So yeah, Mr. Buddy.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. That last piece of work, which was initiated in the late 2016, November from memory, was around the options for forming the legal structure that the combined irrigation group may operate under. Secondly, the second part of it was around the communication that group then had with their prospective members or the prospective irrigators around their prospectus. So we didn't pay for the prospectus because that was definitely their work, but we assisted with the communication of them. And for each of the dollars that we put in, the government's irrigation fund matched it one for one. And the farmers were also contributors, so it's not just us.
We're a portion of it.
And can you foresee that $500,000 getting larger? Or?
The fund is very clear that we fund pre-feasibility and feasibility. That they are, with a prospectus in place, at that end of that feasibility phase, because the way I see it, because now they're looking for genuine expressions of interest. I'm not saying we aren't, but we are, you know, the project is well through its development phase. So yeah. I'd be surprised if there were too many more, but we'll cover over there.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, any further questions, Councillor Leader?
Just going to make a comment as far as the use of grey water on golf courses go. If anybody here has played golf at Sunua Beach on Bali, they'll know that it works a treat. Wonderful golf course, and all of its water is from the local sewage treatment plant.
Full of nutrient.
Exactly.
How do you clean your golf ball would be a question.
It's staying on the agenda, can we please? Item 6, we've got a workshop on coming up, and later this afternoon at 3:15. So no further questions for the Chief Executive's report. I will go back to the extra item I added to the Chair's report, which is a request for support from the Dunedin City Council. And for clarity, I will read out the email so we're all clear on exactly what the request is for. Dear colleagues, this is from Mayor Cullen. As you'll be aware, the Dunedin City Council is leading a campaign to ensure that the Dunedin Public Hospital rebuild preserves the hospital as a top-flight teaching hospital in the city centre. Given the close and essential connection between the University of Otago Medical School and the hospital, we contend that this is vital to Dunedin economic and social sustainability. It is also essential to preserve tertiary health services for the entire southern region, particularly Otago. My council would greatly appreciate the support from the wider Otago region in our campaign. Expressions of support, such as letters to the Prime Minister or video messages for our campaign website from any or all of you, would demonstrate the shared concern for the well-being of our communities and their health services. If you are able to offer that support, could you reply to that? So there was originally some communication from one of the city staff, communication staff, last week, and I wasn't in a position to respond to it, and this email came in on Tuesday, yesterday morning at 9:20, so that's why I've sought your permission to add it to the agenda. Reiterate that it's... ensure that the Dunedin Public Hospital rebuild preserves the hospital as a top-flight teaching hospital in the city centre. And then talks about the links between the medical school and the hospital, etc. Open it up for discussion.
Well, Mr Chairman, I'll lead off by saying I will support you if you've got on the mind and you have the support of other councillors to write to both the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health in support of what the Mayor has outlined. And I take that point of view because I believe that the future of the University of Otago relies quite a lot on this hospital location decision, because as I think many people will know, the health sciences area is the heart of that university, both financially, in research strength, and in students who come to Dunedin specifically to try to gain entry to either the medical school or the dental school or the pharmacy school or the physiotherapy school. It's not just the medical school, but has a very close relationship in terms of teaching and learning with that hospital facility. I think it's really important for the future of Dunedin that the hospital is built adjacent to all of those university facilities. Otherwise, the university will be at very significant risk of losing its international status as a place of health science education. I support you in writing a letter, or those two letters I suggested. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Councillor Brown?
Yeah, well, I'm totally supportive of what Councillor Deacon says. The only thing is, seeing the letters and the controversy in the paper over the last few days, it's totally important that it's non-political. We're going to get wrapped up in all that rubbish. So I'm totally supportive of what Councillor Deacon says.
Okay. Councillor Scott?
I concur with the two previous speakers.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton?
Yeah, you might expect a slightly different view. My view is that what we should be responding to is a comprehensive business case and evidence. We are an organisation that's evidence-based. Parochialism is not evidence. It might well be that the right thing to do is, as has been already described. But when you think about health, you think about the way it's being delivered, you think about the people who will receive the benefits of the health system. In fact, it's going to be a much larger, older population than it is now. And when you take a look at the growth of Otago over the life of this new hospital, the centre of gravity of the elderly population is moving rapidly west. And now I'm not suggesting for a moment that there is another option in the mix. All I'm trying to describe is that there are an enormous number of changes happening around the health system and around the catchment, if you like. And from my point of view, I think it's really, really important that there be a comprehensive business case so that in financial terms, we know what the benefits or the costs are associated with where any site might be, and we're able to have an intelligent discussion about the social implications of that and the economic development implications of that. And at the moment, I see parochialism driving this a bit. I'd like to see evidence, and I think we're in a situation at the moment where there are a lot of people quite anxious about the centre of the city, and there's a cake in it. I mean, you can understand why that is the way it is, but that anxiety is getting in the road of a process that may well come out with the same answer and that we can very confidently back. And so I'd just be slightly reserved on that.
Councillor Robertson.
Totally support what Councillor Kempton just said. I feel uncomfortable about the best way forward being individual letters to the Prime Minister or video messages going out into the environment. I think what is the best way to represent the people of Otago, which is what I've taken an oath to do, And in doing that, you do need to have a well-reasoned, collaborative, proper discussion on this issue before we leap to individual lobbying. And I think that we need to be really mindful of our whole region and what's best for the health needs of that whole region. Absolutely very important, as one facet of it is the link to the university. Absolutely crucial, but there's a much, much wider, broader picture here and a much better way to address it, I feel.
Anybody else? Councillor Luke.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. There's no doubt we want to preserve the hospital as a teaching hospital. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And I can live morally and in principle with the approach of sending a letter. I couldn't live with the approach where we were asked to resource a campaign, for example. I think that's a step too far in terms of our role. So I haven't got an issue with what's been suggested. I support the motion mooted by Councillor Deacon.
I'd also support what Councillor Deacon said. I think the health science and education has got to be the clear message from our province.
So for a little bit of background, and the District Health Board Commissioners updated the mural forum before Christmas, Mr. Bodeker, yep. And they're coming to our next meeting in early May.
In May, 11th of May,
and there is, however, a separate group dealing with the rebuild of the hospital. But we are conscious, as a mural forum, of a need for a greater, it's not collaboration, for the mural forum to be better informed from about some of the District Health Board issues in Otago. I feel quite, it's a topic that you need to be right in the middle of and understand before we too aggressive with any sort of support or campaign. I feel completely out of the depth on this one because there's a whole lot of things, I think as Councillor Robinson articulated, that we need to understand, that it will need to be weighed up. There's some people that will be dealing with that and we'll hear in due course. Up to council, I have no problem with writing to the PM and the minister saying, "Hey, we want to keep our hospital as a top-flight teaching asset." And as I'm sure they're already aware, you know, it's the linkages between the different. Other than that, I don't see a role at this point for council. And I certainly don't see a role, you know, standing in front of a video camera, for example, and being part of this social media.
Mr. Chairman, just to help you, I'll move, because I think it would be good to have a...
Yes, it would, clarity.
I'll move that this council supports you in writing a letter to both the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health in support of the central city rebuild of Dunedin Hospital, all words to that effect.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Scott, open it for discussion.
All right, I just think it's important that it's outlined as teaching hospital.
Yes, picking up the two points in what I understand from what's been said that have been outlined in the email, top flight teaching hospital in Dunedin essentially, and we'll acknowledge the links with the university and the medical school.
I think one of the top flight, I'd say, international quality, because one of the things we're talking about is the way in which the university currently attracts researchers and students from all over the world, particularly for its health sciences.
Mr. Chairman, may I, through you, ask the question of you, so are we talking about it being in Dunedin, or are we talking, so the motion has words to the effect that the ORC supports the Chair in writing to the Prime Minister and Minister of Health on supporting, and we talked about the central city rebuild of an international quality teaching hospital. Mm-hmm. So that's the central city rebuild. So we do touch on to location. which has been very much part of the, as Councillor Brown said, very much part of the you know, the other side of the debate.
Or do we just focus on the length, the teaching facility, and all the benefits that brings?
Because again, through you, Mr. Chairman, the Mayor's letter to you, or the Mayor's email to you, did not talk about Central City. The way I, when you showed it to me, or did
you know, that
I did. Yeah. Okay,
so the hospital was a top flight teaching hospital in the centre city.
Okay, right. Yep. So they are good. Yep. Okay.
So they're touching on location, but that doesn't mean to say we need to.
I have faith in you getting the right wording right.
Central city.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All right, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Against.
Carried. Thank you. All right, and I will separately move next to the last item on our Chair and Chief Executive's report, that those two reports be received. Is there a seconder? Councillor Noon, all in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right, on to part C of our agenda, items for noting. 8 month report. This is our normal reporting mechanism up to the end of February. And you'll see in the attached report good, clear traffic light reporting and some commentary around it. Mr. Donnelly, I'll hand to you for this item, I think.
Yeah, without sort of summarising it, it's 50-odd pages, so it's fairly detailed. The traffic light indicators in the executive summary give the indicators for the year-to-date. Note there's only one red indicator in those, and that's largely because achieving that is outside of our control at the moment, with resourcing being diverted to the Kaikoura earthquake. Overall, there's also the summary of the financials, which is the total activity spend, so it's operating and capital expenditure. We are underspent year to date, and then we've also included forecasts throughout the document which indicate that that underspend will increase by year end. The two biggest areas are around the flood protection work and transport. And those are really timing related, and that spend that is under, some of that will fall into the next financial year. So the forecast underspend is approximately 3.8 million.
Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. Right, open up for questions. Councillor Kempton.
First of all, thank you for the report. Each one of these reports, in my opinion, is easier to read. And much of what's in here we've in fact already talked through at previous meetings, and so there are no surprises. I have one concern, and it may seem minor to some, but I think it's quite significant. On page 5, we talk about buses, and I know, we always end up at buses, but it's anticipated that at year-end, a patronage growth of 3% in Dunedin will not be achieved due to network changes. In my view, that is not evidence-based, and that we can't say that it's due to network changes. We know that we have had some people come to us and say, could you put the bus back into my street? Right? But that doesn't that does not mean that the network changes have resulted in a reduction in patronage. In fact, the network changes were based on, and my understanding is, on good international research that said if you want to raise patronage, then you make your buses a little more direct. Right? So, and so I think that that is not correct, and I'd very much like to see that changed, because we have done no such research. That is, we haven't been able to research the what the price of petrol has done or any of the other variables as well. And I think that because we are talking to some of some users of public transport about route changes and things right at the moment, I think that we need to be very clear in our understanding of what might have made patronage move, and if we don't know, to obtain it.
All right. So you just essentially,
will it not be achieved? Not, full stop. We don't know why. Well, we're
disagreeing with the last four or five words in the report. Yeah. And the report,
I think it's quite important.
The report stands. We're not here to edit the report, but it's just your interpretation of what's been reported is...
That's right.
Yeah, right. Anybody else? Councillor Scott.
Yeah. 8 months review, another, very informative report. When you go through this, it reminds ourselves on the targets that we've agreed at the start of the year and so forth. And I've always been a fan of the colour-coded system, very quickly sort of cut to the chase. That being said, I think the last two times that we've had this report, I've had concerns about outcomes versus outputs. And the issue that I've followed up in particular was water quality. And the fact that we would have green lights for water quality, whereas we know through our SOE reporting that something like 39% of our waterways are either poor or fair. So there's that sort of anomaly between the outputs, the targets that we've set in terms of our annual plan, and the reality, the outcomes on the ground. Now, I think in terms of water quality, I think it's fair to say that we now have a plan and a budget in place towards 2020, so that anomaly between being busy, achieving the outputs, and the outcomes that we need to achieve, I think there's a pathway there. But nevertheless, so every time I read a report like this, there are other examples that sort of come to me and sort of agitate me. For example, let's talk about rabbits. When you look at rabbits, there's green lights. And what it basically says is that we're busy doing our job. We're doing our administration in relation to MAL 3. Whereas the reality on the ground is, not necessarily through this council at this particular point of time, but the reality on the ground is that from time to time, properties will have MAL 5. So, for example, when a new councillor turns up at the table and he says, "What the hell are you doing about rabbits?" You know, we've sort of got a situation where we look at these reports and we pat ourselves on the back, we're saying we're doing all right, but there's anomalies there. And what it basically comes down to is outputs reporting versus outcomes reporting. Now, this is all about outputs, and that's fine. And one of the arguments that's always been put in relation to that is we can only report on what we can control. So for example, we do what we do and we report on it. Whereas the argument has been put to the council as of late, well, maybe we can control more if we decide to. You know, so we've got these things sort of coming on here. Like going back to the rabbits one. So saying we're doing the job, whereas the reality on the ground is different. We've just had a debate on the new virus, and everybody's saying, well, things are really bad out there, we need to get this new virus. Whereas here's another report that says we're doing okay. And so my concern about these types of report, even though it's a very good report, is it's so easy to get ourselves in a bit of a bubble, you know, and we focus on what we've agreed. So my question, is at what point do we really do this outcomes analysis? Is this a long-term plan, or do we have to wait that long? Personally, I would actually like to see a report like this, and I've suggested this before, but just that reminder that while what we're doing in terms of outputs is achieving the green, that maybe the reality on the ground is different. And it's that drives the governance, reminds the governance that what are the things that we need to do differently. So, for example, in relation to rabbits, we're doing the pest reference group, and we're saying, well, you know, this three-year situation that we've got, that even if a rabbit farmer doesn't comply, that it's got basically 3 years. And so, you know, there's some really... We're doing what we can within the plan at the time.
But all I'm simply saying is yeah, good report. But it's sending, I think, some wrong signals to us as governors and to the community. And I think we just, let's not forget about that. And in terms, so that when are we going to address this in terms of outcomes reporting? Is this the long-term plan? Is this where the focus is going to be on that?
No, but we might come back to that in a minute. Councillor Robertson?
Yeah, just on the same topic. Councillor Scott raises an important issue. But yeah, just reminding ourselves that the auditor did comment that the types of measures that we had previously, which were the ones that you outlined, specific water quality type targets, things like that, were not what was really acceptable. We need to have measurable, these ones anyway were much better. He found that they were not long-term targets, they were things that could be achieved within a year period, which is important. But hear what you're saying, and I think I share your thinking on that we do need as a council to get a bit better at looking at how effective we have been in terms of some of our plans, and it's actually a requirement to review plans every 5 years as well. How efficient and effective have we been on meeting some of things that are outlined in our plans? That's true. Also, we have state of environment reports where we can track those sorts of things. So as a council, we do need to track progress on those types of aspirations which are laid out in our plans. It's just whether or not within a year you can achieve all of them, which is what you need to report on in this type of reporting.
So this is a report on how we're going achieving our annual plan targets,
yeah.
Specific projects, project by project, heading by heading. And so I think you're actually touching on two different topics.
No, of course not. Let's not beat around the bush. I'm not decrying what's here. I understand the reason why it's here.
Yep.
But I'm asking, you know, my criticism of it is it's losing connectivity to the outcome. So I'm not decrying what's been done here. I said it's a good report.
Yep.
But I'm saying, well, when are we going to face up, in terms of maybe an outcomes report, in terms of the anomalies between, because it's plenty important, you know, between, you know, for example, we're doing good things in water quality with our plan.
Yep.
We're expecting to get 2020, are we or are we not? In terms of rabbits, you know, we're doing good things with rabbit. We've done everything, we agreed. Thank you, Mr. CE. But the reality is we're a big distance away from where we want to or should be. Well, I think we're all saying that about a month ago. And that is the driver for the pest reference group. Boom, boom, boom. What's the time frame?
It's part of the topic that will be dealt with as part of the review.
but what I'm saying is that we've got the systematic audit agreed in terms of our outputs. Where's that systematic audit in terms of our outcomes?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, through you. And that review, I think it's been touched on by the Deputy Chairperson, is when we review our plans. This council at its last committee meeting of the Finance and Corp approved a draft annual plan. And in that draft annual plan, we did not say we were going to go out and kill rabbits. We said we were going to go out and do the rabbit work that we've done historically, which is to monitor and implement the plan. So that was the time, if the council wanted to have a different approach to one of the many pests that we've got in our region, which is rabbits, that we could have done that. So, I mean, essentially the way I look at this is that I'm reporting to you on the services that you have bought on behalf of your constituency. And I don't think you're disagreeing with that, Councillor Scott, but that's the time when the plans are reviewed to actually ask the question, is it the right plan?
We all know it's the wrong plan.
I don't know, we can discuss
that. Today's not the, and this topic's not the time to be jumping to those conclusions, but, Councillor Newton.
Just a brief comment on Councillor Scott's points, and the way I look at it is that this 8 months report is one tool for the governance arm to understand how we're tracking with dealing with a whole lot of topics. But equally, we use other barometers such as feedback from our constituents, the number of submissions that we get through an annual plan process on some of the topics that Councillor Scott has referred to. So I just see it as a tool for us to understand where we're tracking, but not the only tool that we rely on. Thank you.
Thank you. A couple of comments I'd make. I mean, there's the normal one, there's an overset, and I see some extra expenditure in the minimum flow project. Good to see, because we've asked to ensure that those processes move along promptly. I do have a question, Dr. Palmer, I think it'll be for you. On page 7, near the bottom, flood and drainage schemes, water quality work was budgeted across 3 drainage schemes, but advice has been received that they do not need to invest significant capital to improve water quality in order to pump water from our drains into receiving water bodies. As a result, $300,000 of budgeted work will not be undertaken. I might have missed that in one of your reports, or can you just update us on some more detail around that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, at the time this annual plan was being prepared, plan change 6A was still being worked through.
Yes.
And at that time it was not known how pump stations would be handled in terms of the discharges from them. And so we took a precautionary approach of providing for some capital works that might deal with water quality issues that would be remedied as a consequence of plan change 6A.
Right.
As it's transpired, pump stations are treated as, like dams, water is transferred from one side to the other. And
right.
So we do not need to undertake that work for that reason. There may well be some expenditure for general improvement. So there'll be some expenditure, but nowhere near the levels we were anticipating when this plan was prepared.
Great. So that's with respect to many of their consents coming up for renew in 2018, from memory.
That's correct, and we were anticipating the need to renew consents.
Yeah. Good. Right. Thank you. I did have one other question.
Councillor
Brown.
Just a couple of comments. I think this is a very good report. It does give a good indication of the huge breadth of the work the council undertakes, and generally the achievement rate has been pretty good. Just a couple of things, a couple of overspends. I know we've talked about these both briefly recently. It was the democracy budget where we were overspent by $250,000. What was the main reason for that? And also the harbour safety, we were overspent by $420,000. Obviously that's something to do with the harbour mass, but it seems a hell of a lot of money to be overspent for that activity.
Yeah. That was my other question. Mr. Donnelly.
The harbour master one, firstly, we budgeted for, essentially budgeted for half an FTE because we were going to move to getting that position filled through the year. What we've actually done is, right from the beginning of the year, we've had that service contracted, and through having it contracted, obviously it's at a higher rate than what it would be if it was internal. And we're still in the position where we haven't filled that yet. So that's the main reason for the overspend there. And the other question was around
democracy.
Oh, democracy.
Scones.
The cost of democracy.
Oh yeah. That's got the election cost in there.
I was going to. Yeah.
So the cost of the election. Was more expensive than what we budgeted. We budgeted largely on what it cost back in 2013. The actual costs that have come through this year were higher because usually the costs are split between all the councils participating, including the DHB, and there was no DHB election. So then essentially the same costs get reallocated across those that do participate. Also, in some of the TA elections, it depends on the costs for processing the returns, depend on whether there was actually an election or not. Like, for example, Clutha didn't have a mayoral election that was uncontested, so that portion of the cost doesn't get allocated as it usually would, and we will end up wearing a bigger share. And overall, costs were significantly higher, particularly postage costs increased significantly. So, we've got, for the election that was held in October, the costs are higher, and of course we will still have unbudgeted by-election costs to go by going there for year-end as well.
So is there any way we as a council could do better?
Get rid of democracy.
Yeah, well, from an election point of view, the costs. We could have budgeted better, but using the previous election costs is usually the best way to forecast that. It's just there had been quite a change this year.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of that month's report? Appear not. Recommendation is that the report for the 8th month review to the 28th of February 2017 be received. Somebody happy to move that recommendation? Councillor Robertson, seconded Councillor Brown. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Thank you to staff. Yes, it is a good clear report to push the way through. Clean Water 2017, item 4. A report there deals with this rather lengthy document, which is the latest in amendments that has come out of government, and it is open for submission. You'll see the report there, and I'll hand over to Mr. McRae in a minute. But the submissions close on the 28th of April, which is prior to our next round of committee meetings. And I think we'll add on to this recommendation that we, if some councillors are happy to work with staff, I know Councillor Robertson and myself are, to help shape up the submission, which will have to be sent prior to our next meeting. But, Mr. McRae, would you like to introduce us to this report, please, and highlight a couple of issues?
This is ongoing work from central government in relation to water quality across New Zealand. I think, by and large, this council is front-footing this and is slightly ahead of the ball game. And so it's a bit of the highlights build out of the issues around water quality generally across New Zealand, as I say, whereas the quality issues, problems we have is really maintaining the quality that we've got here, as opposed to others having to regain good quality water. As has been discussed at previous meetings, there are some issues around the interaction of what's proposed here and the planning documents that we have in place now. And the highlight of that, obviously, is the necessity to fence all water bodies from animals in a staged program through time, which, if implemented for Otago, would see large tracts of relatively low intensity grazing country requiring fencing just to comply with the rule, and notwithstanding the quality of the water that may be coming off there at the moment. And so there's some concern around unnecessary exposure to costs for people, but also that the opportunities at the moment that we see at farmers tend to put their fences not at the riverbank but some distance from the riverbank, and that has been encouraged through the water plan already, so that there is some buffer margin between farming activity and the water in the river or a lake. The objective behind that piece of the changes to the national policy statement suggests that the fence will go right at the boundary between the water and the land, because the image appears to be that you don't want animals in the water body, therefore we're likely to lose a lot of that buffer strip which is inside a, in our minds, a well-placed fence. So that's a piece of down at the detail of what its implications are likely to be for Otago as a result of what's there. And then other parts of it are really, in a lot of ways, just adding more cost to implement good outcomes. So, it's coming from other councils where there is a much more controlled focus rather than enabling focus in their planning document, so that people in Otago, essentially the farming community now, are undertaking activities and doing it with an environmental consequence in mind, as opposed to doing what the council says they have to do. And so we're getting people doing things for the right reason and contributing better outcomes. So there's some implications for this council. Essentially it's trying to achieve the right things. It's just how it's going about achieving those right things. So I don't think we have a complaint about the intent, it's more about the how that is the main concern, which I think the submission should from this council should focus on.
Thank you, Mr. McRae. So there is some reasonable changes that have been proposed here. The monitoring of macroinvertebrates, and so there'll be some extra cost in water monitoring. There is a report required. I just can't remember the time frame. It's reasonably short. First one later this year to the ministry on how the region will achieve the swarmable targets, and I think there's a final copy to be submitted by March of 2018. And so there's a bit of detail sitting behind there.
That to some extent follows the reporting back on how we were going to achieve the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management.
Yes.
And whether we had a program in place, needed a program in place. We've essentially reported on that matter, saying that we have provisions in place in our plan that comply now.
Yep.
And so we needed a little bit of work, but essentially, by and large, we're in a good place.
Questions? Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I shudder a little bit at some of the bits and pieces in here. I think we've Mr. Craig's paper certainly highlights the most important issues for Otago, and have any concerns about that. I would like to explore, if I could, maintaining or improving overall water quality. I just would like a practical interpretation of the issues with respect to our lakes, whether we can now allow our lakes to degrade to a point where the new proposals for the NPSFM, to a bottom level there, whereas what we would say is, well, if they degrade at all, we're not doing our job. And so I'm interested in just how that mechanism works. The other point is the question of, because the NPSFM, particularly with the E. coli numbers, if it actually ends up with numbers that are higher than what we've got in our plan, represent lower quality water that is in our water plan, you're suggesting that that component of the NPSFM then takes precedence. Is that what you're saying? So there's a couple of questions in there.
Well, I think I understand the question, so I'll give you some answers, and if I haven't answered it correctly,
we'll see if
again.
I can see if you do.
Yeah. First, but overall water quality, that's in relation to the region, and it's originally it was discussed by government that meant that for some industries that have significant economic value, they may have to, in scientific terms, manky up a creek or a river. And that's okay as long as the other rivers are being looked after. And the example that was being talked about was Kinley. There's a big pulp mill putting material into a river, and that river was degraded and would continue to be a degraded water body. So that was seen as something that was necessary. That's since been seen, and in Otago, I don't think there's a catchment that's going to put their hand up and say, manky our river up, so that someone else can have a really clean river and we'll still have good overall water quality. That's been debated through the courts. And the issue of man-keying up a river somewhere, but making sure the rest of the rivers are better than they were, so that on average water quality is better, has been through the courts, and the courts have said that's a complete misinterpretation of what is intended by the Act. Mm-hmm. So it relates to each water body needs to be improved overall. And so the concept of water being degraded irrespective of its quality, and we've got particularly good water quality, which is in the better parts of the Otago are well above the A grade standard that was set by the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management. So those need to be retained where they are rather than allowed to degrade. So the overall message that's coming out of all of this work that government's doing is that what was talked about as the assimilative capacity of a river is not available for use for dilution in the future. So the idea is that, yes, they haven't taken out the concept of a mixing zone yet, but clearly the pressure is on the scale and size of that mixing zone. So seeing that we need to be doing better treatment for discharges before they actually get discharged than we have been doing in the past. We being society, I'm talking about.
But just, if I can just ask a supplementary point, though. With respect to our lakes, there appeared to be a mechanism in which they could come down to a kind of a bumper stop, and we would still, in fact, be working in terms of this document here. Is that the right interpretation?
No, it's not the intention of the plan at all to let any water degrade, and it hasn't been the intention of the water plan from day one of that plan. It's been...
No, I'm talking about the new provisions here that you are...
So they have reinforced the maintain or enhance.
Yeah, the main,
so it's up to regional communities if you want to set your target at a higher level than the swimmable that the ministers set.
It wasn't clear to me whether we could do that or not. That might answer the whole question.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. It's certainly reinforcing the maintain and enhance, and it has elevated the government's target for water quality from secondary
contact.
Secondary recreation contact, which is you can kayak in it, to being swimmable, so you can actually get in it. So they have elevated the quality of the water expectations beyond that which they had when they first started with the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management. So they've set the standard, the bar higher. Now, our lakes, the water quality is pretty good in our lakes. In fact, it's as good as you can get it. And yes, there are some issues around macrophytes, microorganisms in there. Mm-hmm. That's not specifically a water quality issue, but it's clearly an issue of concern around lake water users.
So the government's target is, well, there's a number of them. Currently, the 72% of the waterway is swimmable, which, and by swimmable, they mean 80% of the time. And the only indicator they're using here is E. coli. And the number of E. coli, the cutoff, is 540.
Yeah.
Now, we have some regional targets that are well below that.
I understand that.
260 and right down to 10 for the lakes. And that's up to our communities that are able to decide that.
That is still the case.
Yes, that's my understanding.
We got it.
Yes. Yep. Sorry. Yep. No, it's not a. And to protect that, they got the government got a hammering when they put this out for discussion initially around that you're going to drag everything down to the bottom line. No, no, they reinforced that you must maintain or enhance.
Yeah, just that I wasn't certain about what maintain really meant.
We have been, well, just to take that one step further then, we have been talking with MEFE on several occasions that the current documents don't specifically state that we can create standards that are higher than A1.
Yes.
And we have been saying specifically we want that so that should we be in a case where we have to enforce something, the defence won't be able to be used, that these guys are just set it too high. Yeah. They are higher than you as a government have set, so these guys have set it too high. Yeah. So we want that, would like that specifically stated, and haven't been successful in getting that put in yet.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
There was a number of hands up. Councillor Bell.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fraser, in the second paragraph of stock exclusion there, where it says a one-size-fits approach for fencing is likely to be unworkable, I would suggest that that should be, will be unworkable, because if you took the difference between the Matukituk River and, say, a small stream in West Otago, South Otago, or on the Tauri, it's totally different. Mm-hmm. So I believe that we're going to have a stronger view there. It will be unworkable.
Well, I suppose that's what we're trying to indicate, yes. Yeah. You know, Rockland Station or an upland on the Penny Plain station in Tall Tussock country with sheep is going to be a way different from a dairy farm on the flats. And for most too extreme.
Order, please. reconvene the meeting. Just before I go to Councillor Deacon with a question. So, for those that have read the document, on page 26 is a stock exclusion, so we need to be clear. It's cattle, deer and pigs, and there are transitions. And on steeper land, greater than 15 degrees, whatever that is, and how will we decipher that?
It's Tauranga Road.
There are various, so for example, I'm not going to read it all out, but for example, on July the 1st, 2022, for beef cattle on steeper land, you that are break feeding must be excluded from waterways over a metre wide or lakes and wetlands. Right, so the extensive grazing on our hill country with 20 beef cows and their calves and 400 ewes in a block will be fine. But when they're in a mob, or break feeding in this case, then they should be out of the waterway. And I don't actually have too much of a problem with that. And so we need to just look at the detail there, and the issue for ORC, in my view, around stock exclusion from waterways is, how does that fit with our current permitted activity rule, where stock can have access to waterways, provided there's no slumping, pugging and sediment and whatever the other conditions are. So we need to see whether there's an opportunity to knit them together and
how. Yeah, I accept that entirely.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to get Fraser.
But it will be a small step from there. We've done that, now we'll do the whole lot.
Yeah, well, I was actually on Land and Water Forum when this got drafted. It's not quite the same as it was then, but it came out of the rural sector actually. Back on topic, Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, I think it's just a very small point. Well, I think it's a small point. I totally like the way the director has drafted a potential submission here with the points that he thinks need to be made on behalf of Otago. Except under economic well-being, he simply seems to be stating a fact that there is this element introduced into the paper. And there's no indication here of what an Otago viewpoint would be on that. And every other submission here has got that, except economic well-being. And I'm wondering what's in the director's mind in terms of our submission, if indeed we make one, specifically on economic well-being.
Mr. McRae.
I suppose it's the access to water is retained, so that people can get access and use water in its many guises, and we've talked about the use of water earlier in today's meeting. Is that, and then the cost of getting to able to use that water and or the land around without impacting, hopefully, on the activities that are being used. It's just an attempt to put into effect that essentially we need access to water for Otago's economy, we need good quality water, and then the costs of retaining and maintaining that quality of water is important too.
Mr. Chairman, I would I'm surprised by that response. I'd have thought that this insertion of economic well-being would have more reference to water takes for irrigation, rivers used for power generation, etc., etc., rather than what the director has said. But I might be wrong. I haven't read the paper. Councillor Kempton waved at me at lunchtime and I recoiled in horror when I saw the size of it. But I will get around to it one day.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. Look, this council has recognised for as long as I can remember that dilution is not a solution. And I think, you know, I'm just trying to think how many years ago that when it recognised that one of the key objectives was swimmability. And so I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Fraser and his team and others for all the hard work that they've gone into all this, because I think Fraser's right that this council has front-footed the issue, has been proactive. Like in terms of swimmability, a lot of our water bodies are swimmable. And those that aren't, I think we've set as a target 2025. So that's good. Well done and thank you. In terms of the national perspective, I agree with the national perspective. Look, Otago's not an island. You know, as you drive up and down the country, there's some councils that are doing better at this than others, and it's important for all our brothers and our sisters and so forth that we all have a consistent bottom line. So I think that's really, really important, and whatever can be done from a national perspective, then that's good. In terms of the fencing, I've always felt that was a grey area in terms of our plan, in terms of pugging and so forth, and the principle from my perspective is that particularly where there's intensive agriculture, that of course you don't want your stock in the waterway. So that's the principle, and it's just all about identifying an appropriate transition time. In terms of the fencing, Councillor Kempton's got this chart. Are we talking permanent fencing? Like with dairy, you know, this single line dairy fence that put up when the cows are in the paddock, is that going to be applicable anymore under these rules, or are we basically saying dairy cows, permanent fence? And I was a little bit unclear what you're saying, that the fence, through you, Mr. Chair, that the fence had to be right beside the waterway, because it seemed to me, of course there's going to be a buffer strip, there needs to be some practicalities, there is going to be some erosion. So 2 points, is it going to be a permanent fence for dairy farm cattle, and why can't there be a buffer strip?
No, I didn't say that there wouldn't be a buffer strip.
Yeah.
Misinterpret that, sorry, I'll be clear. First of all, I don't think that I haven't seen a distinct definition of what fence is, but clearly it will have to be able to exclude stock or prevent stock going through it. So whether it's a single hot wire, electric wire, as I think you're talking about, on dairy farms, and three wires for break feeding in a mob of sheep, whether that's the sort of fence that's envisaged, I haven't seen anything that's definitive on what fence actually means yet. But clearly, if it's not a structure of some sort, and it is not preventing stock from going through it, then it's not fit for purpose. The buffer strip bit I was talking about was if you change the purpose of the fence.
Yeah.
At the moment, the fence is doing two things. It is creating a space between the river and the stock, and farmers by and large understand that there's a buffer strip in there which is helping to stop some of the sediment getting in, stopping some of the bugs getting across and that sort of stuff. But if you change the purpose of the fence, it's just to stop stock being able to be seen in a water body, then the idea of having a slightly wider distance between your fence and the river goes away. The water quality dimension to that strip might go away. Now, there's 101 reasons why you locate a fence where it is. And for some of them in the bottom end of the Pomahaka, some of the fences are being put in there 20, 25 metres back from the river because they're low, out on the floodplain, and the first flood down that river will take the fence away. So sticking it there is not sensible. But in other places where there is steeper soil, steeper topography, perhaps looser soils, sandier soils or something like that, where you can get away with more filtering, you may go closer to the river. So farmers know their paddocks better than we can write a rule for it, and they will zigzag those fences along, creating a buffer strip that reflects what's happening there, the steepness of the slope, the type of soil that's there, type of vegetation that's there, and the stock that they're grazing. So they will vary that distance to reflect their farming, their individual farming operation. If the reason for having a fence here is just to stop stock being able to be seen in a river, then the idea of trying to buffer what you're doing from the river goes away.
Yeah, but I think for the fence to exist, it will typically have to be a distance away.
It should be out of floodplain, and most farmers will do that. But the other benefits of having a strip between what they're doing and the river may not be accommodated in some situations.
Okay.
So the wording used is an effective method, so it can be a temporary wire, which is fine.
As long as the power's on.
If it's not and they get through, they're not excluded from the waterway.
Well, I haven't complied with that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'd encourage you all to have a good read, and you know, there's discussion here around stock crossings. If you have a mob of stock crossing more than once a week, then you need to put in place a bridge or a culvert. And we made some adjustments to our water plan around those structures a few years ago. So there's a range of things there. So
is there any chance of giving a hard copy of that, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. If ask Lauren and she'll print you a copy. Yes,
please.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the point I was trying to make, that this council is well ahead of the majority of what's in there.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Correct. There's just some alignment, some fit with our existing policies and what that might mean. And there's, I've already had questions by a number of farmers. So there's some exclusions for hill, and then there's some rolling, and then there's flat. So what does that mean for the narrow flats at the head of the Tuki Valley, for example, which are a small part of a high country station. So, anyway.
But again, it's up on the Penny Plain as well, where it's pretty flat.
Yeah.
It talks on a lot of the tall tussock grassland is fairly flat.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mr. McRae. Mm-hmm. The recommendations the report has received. I'd like to add on to that. I know Councillor Robertson's keen and should be there as Chair of Policy. Is there anybody else would like to review the draft submission before staff send it off? No. Councillor Kempton, was that wiggling your hand as a yes or just wiggling your hand?
I just put my glasses on.
Oh, right. Sorry. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Councillor Scott? Yeah.
You give us a copy?
Two or three of us, yep. Mm. All right, Councillor Scott, Councillor Robinson, Councillor Woody. And we'll work with staff to finalise the submission. I'm happy to move those two recommendations. Is there a seconder? Councillor Kempton, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right. Financial report, item five. Mr Donnelly.
I haven't really got too much to add with this paper. It's covering the same period as the 8-month report. Obviously, the statement of revenue and expenses, just to note there that the underspend there is less than the underspend that we looked at in the total 8-month review, because this underspend there is only the operating expenditure. It excludes the capital expenditure, which is combined in the variance that we discussed earlier.
Thank you. Open the report for discussion. See a statement of financial position, a number of notes. Any questions?
Happy to move the report be received.
Chairman. Thank you, Councillor Noon. Seconded, Councillor Brown. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. All right, documents signed under Council seal, very much procedural. You'll see there one deed of assignment and a couple of certificates under Section 147 of the RMA. I'll move that the report is noted. Is there a seconder? Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Report back from councillors. Councillor Deaker.
I represent the council at the Tertiary Precinct Planning Group. And University Polytech Museum, District Health Board, DCC, ORC, we're all there except the museum. And the discussions were pretty much routine, focused on that part of the city and its issues. And at the start of the university year, the polytechnic year, of course, much of the issues were about the quality of housing, which is going up quite dramatically for the kids. Cleanliness, rubbish on streets, etc., etc. I reported on our the start of this new ITS Bend stage of our leaf flood protection scheme. Had just got underway at the time of this meeting, and I reported on public transport issues, particularly the hub, and our need to consult with the university and the polytechnic about the location of a super stop or stops in that campus area. And I want to thank again Dr. Palmer and Mr. Collings for their regular support of me in attending these meetings and making myself useful. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Deaker. Is there any other, Councillor Kempton?
Yeah, it's probably appropriate. There's been a lot of activity in the transport area and meetings and so on that have been attended. Probably worth a little bit of a catch-up now. I've got a little report here. I didn't have it in time to be circulated with the papers, but our secretary has a copy of it. But first of all, the committee meeting section of the agenda incorporates the minutes of the combined RTCs and the workshops held on the 17th of February, so we can put that to one side. Most recent meeting was held on the 30th of March. An intensive round of meetings is planned until the 18-21 review of the land transport plan is notified in October for consultation in November. And then the strategic content and the policies have largely been settled, and much of the work remaining will be around nomination prioritising of projects for inclusion. So that's actually running really well and running a bit ahead of time. We ran a series of roadshows with all territorial local authorities to upskill councillors on the role of the regional transport committees, explain the process of preparing a regional land transport plan, and the steps necessary to ensure that their projects prioritise well at both a regional and national level. The plan strategic framework was set out and feedback was requested on this and any other transport matters. All meetings proved valuable. The QLDC meeting was spirited but particularly useful. So I chaired the meetings with CDC, QLDC and DCC, and Councillor Bell chaired the meeting with Waitaki District. The CODC meeting is yet to be held, and it might be that I'll be negotiating about the chairing of that too, Councillor Bell. But we'll talk about that a little later. The South Island chairs met on the 20th of March in Christchurch. There's something of a success story here. Councillor Bell and I, along with Dr. Turnbull, attended. Most of the business centred on the recently released government policy statement on transport. Third quarter of 2016, the South Island chairs met with the Secretary of Transport and the Minister of Transport to set out some specific issues which are emerging in the South, while national transport strategies were becoming increasingly Auckland-centric. There has been an extraordinary correlation between the issues that the South Island chairs raised and the new provisions in the GPS. Just including, amongst some others, a 55% increase in the regional improvements activity class, which is an enormous increase, the opportunity to broaden the scope of projects that might be funded under that class, and the possibility of one-off reductions in the finance assistance rate to ease the local share components. I'm sorry, that would be an increase in the financial assistance rate, to ease local share. So that was really important. continuing support for active transport modes, cycling and walking, increased emphasis on tourism, and particularly with respect to the South Island, an increasing emphasis on resilience around main tourist and freight routes. So, but notwithstanding the above, we still made a submission. We made a couple of the major points we raised were related to the government government policy statement's one transport system, as they called it. And we suggested that the provisions of the GPS, in fact, lack strength in terms of producing a one transport system. The chairs considered that what could be funded under the GPS constrained that ideal. The idea of funding from the Land Transport Fund a log barging proposition in the Marlborough Sounds, a non-road solution to congestion on Frankton-Queenstown corridor, or even the dredging of the Victoria Channel and Otago Harbour to get larger log ships up to the city and take the pressure off State Highway 88. Those are things that, in the view of the South Island chairs, all have a direct and favourable funding impact on the roading network, and they need to be considered for funding out of the roading network's funding. That was one of the major points. And the other one was the ability to genuinely work rail and road together as a one network system. And that's, of course, severely constrained because of the incompatible funding models, given that KiwiRail is an SOE. And so we've submitted on the basis that Ministry of Transport has to go back to central government to say we haven't got any levers to pull to take things off road and put them on rail, sea or air or vice versa, to mix between those. So we need some tools. They're going to have to be very high-level tools. Very high-level funding propositions, but anyway, we're pushing that at government right at the moment. But beyond consideration of the government policy statement, the regions agreed to continue to commit to a scoping exercise for a full South Island economic network model covering both tourism and freight, and ORC has committed to that, a very small amount of money, I might add, but still it's great to have that commitment. But that work's expected to be completed in time for looking for us to get an understanding and also to look to fund the job itself in the 2018-19 annual plans of the various TLAs. And that's a pretty exciting piece of work. It's a piece of work that I was hoping that Otago would do on its own, but even better, we get cheaper in bulk doing the whole of South Island. So that was all I had on with respect to a transport catch-up.
Good. Been busy. Thank you, Councillor Kempton. Any other reports, Councillor Deegan?
I wanted to ask a question of Councillor Kempton, if I could.
Yes.
It was a very good report, thank you. All well and good, but what's happened to the Beaumont Bridge? When's it going to be replaced? And secondly, when are we as a regional council going to sit down with our district colleagues and try to work out a solution to the camper van freedom camper problems related to tourism, related to water quality, related to our general emphasis on being one of the major tourism centres in New Zealand? We seem to have stood back from this issue, waved our hands and said this is not our problem, it's a district council issue. I believe in working with districts, particularly CODC and QLDC, we could help to relieve this very significant problem in our region.
If I can just respond to that. Point one, Beaumont Bridge. I think that the, of course, we have to see what NZTA bring to the program, but Councillor Bailey might be able to help me. I think the intention is that, in fact, there is likely to be construction started within the next 3 years. Have to keep in mind, of course, that all of these things have to respond to a benefit cost analysis and so on. And of course, as far as bridging work was concerned, the Koora Falls bridge stood well ahead of Beaumont in that respect. The second point you make is a point that was included as a minor submission point, but in fact it was just one of the list of submission points that the South Island chairs pushed back to MOT, but also there's more flexibility in the government policy statement with respect to funding of freedom camping related issues out of something like the regional improvements activity class that wasn't there before.
So those things are actually being, it's on
the agenda?
Yeah, it is.
Councillor Bell, do you want to add to that?
Well, I can do, because at the Zone 5 and 6 it was raised there, and it was introduced by Terry Sloan, who chairs our group. Yeah. And just pull that added on there too, we are going to try and meet on the same time when 5 and 6 meet, so mm-hmm. then we can be part of 5 and 6 later on in the day or whenever right. they meet, so or the day before or whatever. So we are going to be, yes, but getting back to your camper vans, the whole South Island are working on that approach jointly through Zone 5 and 6.
Regions and districts.
Yes. Correct.
Thank you. There was another hand somewhere, Councillor Scott, you have a report?
Yeah, just to say that I represent the council at the anniversary day and yes, did a brief speech and toast and so forth. And that was an enjoyable experience.
Well, thank you.
I probably should have said before, with regards to the horticulture tour in Central on my back doorstep, I found a very useful network and education for me in showing me just what is happening in the horticulture world right on my own back doorstep, which I, like you, Councillor Deacon, didn't realise it was guilty, it was right on my back doorstep. Also on the 20th of March, as Councillor Kempton said, was in Christchurch with the South Island Regional Land Transport meeting, and I think that we're going from strength to strength there, and I hope that maintains, and just as I pointed out before, we are building up a relationship with Zone 5 and 6 also. And on that too, I was there at that meeting with Peter and thoroughly enjoyed that meeting also on the 31st. Also, I want to just say about the deemed permit for the 120 plus odd people there in Alex the other day. I was very impressed with our staff and the way it was run. I thought that it was very, very successful, and it was great interaction and discussion taking place from all those user groups that were there. I just thought that, to me, that's the sort of thing that we can make progress and bring everybody together and get around that table. And I thought it was a great day.
Good. Thank you. All right.
Oh, I was just going to quickly note that I represented the council at the signing of the predator-free Dunedin Memorandum of Understanding with Bill English and Maggie Barry at Orokanui, and just that it's a generally constructive and positive step. There were 19 other signatories, so it gives you a sense of scale of who is involved. So pretty much anyone involved in predator control and community groups as well around the Dunedin area. But nevertheless, it was a very good event and actually got a lot of positive feedback with regards to our Environmental Enhancement Fund from all the groups there as well, and what a difference that it's making to our public profiles, even though small grants, but certainly well known out there. Mr McLean was there as well.
Good. Could I just add one quick thing to that zone meeting? And it is significant, Mr Chairman, because you weren't there. You weren't able to sign the back of a picture that was a bit of artwork that was presented to Sir Mark Solomon, which I did on behalf, because everybody did. So
thank you.
Basically just thanked him for all his support and to the Otago region over all those many years.
Good, thank you. Good to note that I might slip in the card for council. All right, you can probably report more fully on the agenda items on Zone 5 and 6 at next committees or next council. Yeah. All right, we'll move on, and thank you, everyone. And item 8 is the recommendations of the Regulatory Committee.
Moved.
Councillor Scott, seconded. Councillor Hope, all in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Recommendations of the Technical Committee, I'm happy to move. Councillor Kempton, second. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Policy Committee.
Move.
Councillor Robertson.
Seconded.
Councillor Deacon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Finance and Corp, Councillor Brown.
Move.
Seconded. Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. The recommendations of the Communications Committee.
Moved.
Councillor Deacon, Second, and Councillor Hope. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Recommendations of the combined Regional Transport Committees of Southland and Otago Councils.
Moved.
Councillor Kempton. Second, and Councillor Bell. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. We'll move on to item 14, and I will move for the reasons as stipulated in section 48(1)(a) and section 72(j) that we move into committee to deal with item 14 to prevent the disclosure or use of official information for improper gain or improper advantage and enable local authority of holding the information to carry on without prejudice or disadvantage negotiations, including commercial and industrial negotiations. I'll move we go into committee. Seconded, Councillor Robertson. Any discussion? All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you.